All right, so today we're diving deep into the world of open source software. And everyone's probably used it, but have you ever stopped to think about the legal side of things?
Not really something you think about every day.
Right, like it's free to use and modify and share, but it's not always as straightforward as it might seem.
Definitely not when you start getting into the legal nitty-gritty.
Yeah, and that's what we're here to unpack today.
Exactly, because believe me, there are some serious legal complexities lurking beneath the surface of that free and open code.
And to really get into it, we're going to be looking at a landmark case, Jacobson v. Katzer.
Ah, yes, a case that really sent shockwaves through the open source community.
And it went all the way up to the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals.
Which means it set a precedent that, is hugely important for anyone working with software today.
Absolutely. This case is like a must-know if you're in the software world.
It really highlights that tension between the whole collaborative spirit of open source and the need to protect the creators who are putting their work out there.
Definitely. So let's set the stage a little bit.
Okay, sounds good.
So we've got Robert Jacobson, who was a model train enthusiast,
Okay.
and he developed this software called the Java Model Railroad Interface, JMRI for short.
And catchy.
And he released this code under the artistic license, which is a type of open source license.
Right. So the intention there was to share it with the community, let other developers build on it and use it.
Exactly, make it a community effort.
Yeah, and open source licenses are all about that balance, granting users certain freedoms while at the same time protecting the creators' rights.
Right. And the artistic license in particular is interesting because it allows for free use modification distribution.
All the good
All
stuff.
the good stuff. But there's a catch, right?
There's always a catch.
It includes specific conditions that actually become super crucial in this case.
Oh, yeah, this is where things start to get interesting.
So enter Matthew Katzer and his company.
Uh-oh.
And they decide to incorporate parts of Jacobson's JMRI code into their own commercial software.
So they're profiting off of someone else's open source code.
Well, that's part of what open source allows, right?
Yeah, in theory, you can use it for commercial purposes, but you still have to follow the license terms.
And that's where Katzer slipped up.
Classic mistake.
They didn't follow the terms of the artistic license, specifically. They didn't provide proper attribution or notices about the modifications they had made to the code.
Ah, so they kind of tried to sweep it under the rug?
In a way, yeah, and Jacobson was not happy about this. He saw it as a clear violation of his license and decided to sue Katzer, alleging copyright infringement.
Makes sense. You put your work out there under certain conditions and someone just ignores them. That's going to be frustrating.
Totally. But here's where things get even more complicated.
Hit me.
The lower court actually sided with Katzer.
What? Really?
Yeah, they didn't see it as copyright infringement.
So what did they consider it then?
They viewed it as a breach of contract.
Oh, so a broken promise rather than a violation of intellectual property rights.
That's the gist of it, yeah. And this distinction becomes super important as the case moves forward.
I bet it does, because those are two very different legal beasts.
They are. And that's exactly what the Federal Circuit had to grapple with. Was this a simple contract dispute or something much bigger?
A question with huge implications for the open source world.
Absolutely.
I'm hooked. Tell me more. So the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, they really shook things up with their decision in this case.
They did. They really did. I mean,
Yeah.
it was a huge win for the open source community.
It was like they finally acknowledged the power of these licenses, like they're not just empty words.
Exactly. So let's break down their reasoning a little bit. Like what made them see this as more than just a contract issue?
Well, they really dug deep into the language of the artistic license. Like they were looking for clues, you know?
Ah, like legal detectives.
Exactly. And they found what they were looking for in some specific phrases.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
So, in particular, they focused on the phrase provided that when the license talked about the requirements for using the software. Interesting.
And their interpretation was that these phrases, these provided that statements, they weren't just like friendly suggestions, you know?
Right, not just like, hey, it would be nice if you did this.
Yeah. Exactly. They were saying these are conditions like hard and fast rules that define the scope of the entire license.
So if you don't meet those conditions, you don't have the right to use the code in the first place.
Boom. That's exactly it. And that's where copyright infringement comes into play.
Because without a valid license, any use of that code becomes unauthorized.
You're catching on fast.
Well, I try. So this whole distinction between covenants and conditions. It's pretty nuanced, legally speaking.
Oh, yeah, it's one of those things that makes lawyers rub their hands together, you know?
But for the rest of us, why should we care? Like, what are the practical implications here?
Okay, so imagine this had just been a simple breach of contract, right?
Okay, I'm imagining.
Jacobson's only option would have been to go after monetary damages.
Like trying to put a dollar amount on the harm caused by not attributing the code properly? Yeah, exactly. And how do you even begin to measure that, especially in the open source world where so much software is free?
Right, it's not like someone stole your car and you can say, oh, it was worth $10,000.
Exactly. It's much more intangible.
So what the court was saying is that in the open source world, there's a different kind of currency at play.
100%. And that currency is things like attribution collaboration, community recognition.
It's about the community and the shared knowledge.
Precisely. And the court recognized that these non-monetary benefits, they have real value and they deserve to be protected just like any other property.
So by upholding Jacobson's copyright claim, they were basically saying these contributions to the community, they matter.
They do. They really do. And they can't just be ignored or brushed aside.
And on the flip side, Katzer, by not following the conditions of the license, he was basically taking advantage of the system.
He wanted to have his cake and eat it too. You know, benefit from the open source community without actually contributing to it.
And the court said, nope, not on our watch.
This is a place for good faith and cooperation, not for freeloaders.
You tell him. So the court even went a step further and acknowledged the economic side of open source.
They did. They really started to get it, you know?
So how did this ruling support the open source model, economically speaking?
Well, think about it requiring attribution, like the artistic license. Does it actually incentivize people to contribute to these projects?
Because they know they'll get credit for their work.
Exactly. Developers like Jacobson, they build their reputation, they get recognition when their code is properly attributed.
And that can lead to more opportunities down the line,
Oh,
right?
yeah, for sure. Collaborations, job offers, even speaking engagements. It all adds
Like a
up.
ripple effect.
Exactly. And Katzer, by trying to bypass all that, he was basically undermining the whole ecosystem.
He was trying to reap the rewards without sowing any seeds.
That's a great way to put it. And the court saw right through that.
So Jacobson v. Katzer, this was a big victory for open source.
It was monumental, it provided much needed clarity, and it really reinforced the importance of respecting these licenses.
It set a powerful precedent, and I have a feeling this is just the beginning.
Oh, I agree. This case has implications that go way beyond the artistic license. This could impact all sorts of open source licenses out there.
So buckle up, folks.
Yeah.
Things are about to get interesting in the world of open source law. You know, this whole case, it really shows how important it is for lawyers to understand open source licensing.
Oh, absolutely. It's not just about software anymore. You know, it's about protecting those creators and making sure we have a good environment for innovation.
Right, because this stuff is the foundation of like almost everything these days.
It really is. And Jacobson v. Katzer, it's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, it brings up so many questions about how we balance sharing knowledge freely with protecting intellectual property.
It's a tough balance for sure.
It is. And it's only going to get tougher as the digital world keeps evolving.
So for our listeners out there who are working with open source software, whether they're writing licenses or, you know, dealing with lawsuits, what are some key takeaways from this case?
Well, the biggest one is clarity. You got to be crystal clear when you're drafting a license.
Like no wiggle room.
Exactly. Especially when you're laying out the conditions for using the software.
So using strong language, like you said before, provided that.
That's the magic phrase. It really hammers home that these are conditions, not just suggestions.
It's like drawing a line in the sand, legally speaking.
That's a great analogy. And on the other side of the coin, if you're involved in a lawsuit about open source, this case gives you a blueprint.
Like a roadmap for how to argue copyright infringement.
Precisely. You don't want to get stuck in breach of contract land. You want to go for the big guns.
Copyright infringement. That's where it's at.
And Jacobson v. Katzer showed that courts are starting to get it. They're willing to protect creators in the open source world.
It's a huge win.
It is. And we were focusing on the artistic license, but this ruling, it has implications for other licenses too.
All right, we talked about that a little bit before, like the GPL and MIT license.
Exactly. And the key question is, do they also have that clear conditional language that defines what you can and can't do with the software?
If they do, then there's a good chance you could argue copyright infringement, just like in Jacobson.
That's the takeaway. This case is a potential game changer for open source as a whole.
It makes us rethink the whole landscape of licensing and enforcement.
Couldn't agree more. And Jacobson v. Katzer, it was a landmark victory for the open source movement, no doubt.
It cleared up so much confusion and gave developers the protection they deserve.
And ultimately, it helped to make sure this whole model of collaboration and innovation can keep going strong.
And as open source just gets bigger and bigger, the importance of this precedent is only going to grow.
It's going to be huge.
Because it reminds us that even though we call it free software, it doesn't mean it's a free-for-all.
Right. Free doesn't mean there are no rules.
Exactly. The rules are there. They're just laid out in the license. And respecting them is crucial for the whole system to work.
It's all about finding that balance, freedom and responsibility. It's a delicate dance.
Well said. I think we've covered a lot of ground today. Mm-hmm. We've gone deep into Jacobson Fees Katzer, explored the legal ins and outs, and hopefully given our listeners a good grasp of why this case matters.
Not just for lawyers, but for anyone who uses or creates software.
Because let's face it, that's pretty much everyone these days.
True that. And it's fascinating how these little legal details can have such a big impact on how we create and share and use software.
It's all connected.
It is, and that's the beauty of it. So to all our listeners out there, we'll leave you with one final thought.
A little something to chew on.
If even free software has rules that can be enforced in court, what does that mean for the future of innovation?
What does it mean for collaboration in this digital age? It's a big question.
It is one that we'll all have to grapple with as we move forward.
It's an exciting time to be alive, that's for sure.
It is full of challenges and possibilities.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.
And remember, the law is always evolving, so stay informed and stay curious.